ladies and gentlemen.
Columbia.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Sound Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Sound Radio. It is a sunny afternoon on Sunday, February 18th. I'm James.
And I'm Travis.
We are hot off of our official Save on Radio launch party. Big thanks to Mark Brand and the amazing Save on Radio team for putting all of this together.
That was a fun party on Sunday.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I was suffering pretty immensely the Monday after. Thankfully, it was a family day.
Yeah, on weekend.
Monday, yeah. it was an absolute blast. Mm-hmm. I hope everyone who was able to come out to that had as good of a time, but didn't suffer as much as me.
Hopefully we made their time better.
Yeah, hopefully.
I mean, you being drunk made my time wonderful. So that was great.
I'm glad we were able to spread that love around. So coming up on our show, we're talking with Ian Cromwell, host of Locals Lounge, on the importance of branding and social media in our latest installment of Musician's Guide. Right. And who else are we talking to, Travis?
We're also going to be chatting with Tom Van Dierson. I hope I said that right.
I hope so, too. He'll definitely correct us when he's on later today.
We'll ask him. That'll be our first question for him. How do you say your last name?
Is it Dutch or Danish? Or did I just offend it?
Yeah, he plays in
those peoples.
I hope so. Let us know on Twitter if we offended you in any way, Dutch Danish communities.
Everyone in Holland.
And those guys.
Yeah.
All right, so Tom Van Dierson, he plays in Small Town Artillery and the Boom Booms.
And this week, we are going to kick things off with a new release. This is our first headliner of our episode. This is the first single off of Haley Blaze's upcoming EP, Let Yourself Go, which comes out April 7th. Haley is a gifted singer-songwriter with a striking voice that really grabbed my attention when I heard it for the first time. I love this song, and I can't wait to hear the full release. This is Small Foreign Faction.
Just a foreign faction, irreconcilable conflict at parties. I feel like a chain reaction, but sadly I don't know how it started. I never wanted anything, and I never got it. I never wanted anything, and I'm
And that was Haley Blaze with Small Foreign Faction. And now on to our weekly roundup. So our first and probably biggest news from the last from this last week is that Canadian, well, BC-based pop rock group Headley has been dropped by their management. But some fans still back the band. This is major news that Headley has been cut. Not only cut from the Junos lineup, but also dropped by their management company due to allegations of sexual misconduct. The allegations relate to interactions and conduct between the band and underage fans. That's been, from what I understand, was circulated originally through Twitter. Headley has released a statement acknowledging the allegations, but they state that they are, quote, simply unsubstantiated and have not been validated, unquote. Despite this recent news, many fans of the band maintain their support for the pop rock group despite these allegations. Watchdog Management and Fieldman Agency, who were the managing group behind the band, issued a statement on Friday morning stating, quote, given the multiple allegations against Headley, we've taken the decision to terminate our business relationships with the band effective immediately. Some additional details is that both of the opening acts for the band have also been withdrawn from their current Cross Canada tour.
Right. In other news, Vancouver's Redgate Art Space gets the boot. Redgate's Art Society, it's a nonprofit that provides a space for local artists. They've been ordered to vacate the space by May 31st. The lease on the space expired 2 years ago. They were running on a month-to-month basis, and according to the BC assessment, the value of the land rose from $4.5 million in 2016 to $5.7 million in 2017.
It's a big jump.
It's a pretty hefty jump.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't sound much like much when it's like 4.5 to 5.7. You know, that's just, it's almost two.
Yeah, oh, you know. Just a paltry $1.5 million jump.
It's a one-digit kind of, but it's in the millions.
Yeah.
And a statement on Redgate's website, the folks behind the rehearsal production space notes, artists and musicians need places to rehearse, practice, create, and experiment, to meet and discuss ideas and share experiences. These crucial spaces are disappearing far more rapidly than they are being replaced.
I think that's a sentiment that we can agree with on our show. And that leads us to a question that we want to pose to you, the listeners, on our social media within the next few days. The big question we have is, with Vancouver housing and rent prices skyrocketing, has Vancouver become unlivable for artists or other people? It's a big question that not only affects the arts and culture community, but a lot of people living in the Lower Mainland area, so we're curious to hear your thoughts.
And I feel like unlivable if you're trying to be like solely on art, but if you want to have like four jobs and art,
if you have time for that art,
yeah, as long as you don't have
whole
to
other
sleep.
Challenge. Yeah,
if you can skip sleep, Vancouver is perfectly livable for the artist.
Yeah, it's one way of looking at it for sure. Switching gears a little bit, and this is big news that for all Canadian artists, round one of CBC Searchlight is now underway. So this is a yearly contest that's focused on finding Canada's undiscovered talent. Last month, artists and bands uploaded their original songs to CBC, where their songs will be evaluated by a panel of judges and can also be voted on by you, the humble listener. You can discover a range of artists and vote for your favorite at www.cbcmusic.ca/searchlight/entries. Voting for round one of Searchlight will continue until Wednesday, February 28th at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The next round begins March 1st, and the 2018 Searchlight prize package grants winners with an incredible opportunity to take their career to the next level. Winners will be placed in the 2018 Alan Slate Juno Masterclass, which is a week-long mentorship program led by some of Canada's music industry leaders. Winners will have their song and career assessed through this program. This week will culminate with a live performance and industry showcase in downtown Toronto. The winning artist or band will take everything that they've learned in the Juno Masterclass straight to the 2019 Juno Awards in London, Ontario, where they will perform at Juno Fest and attend all of the Juno festivities. This prize package includes travel accommodations, registration, and per diems for up to four people. I love those per denims. Some notable winners in the past include The Long War in 2017, Desiree Dawson in 2016, and Orange O'Clock in 2015. For more info, you can check out www.cbcmusic.ca/searchlight.
Mm-hmm. Hey, James, I heard you're a big symphony fan.
I like classical music. I don't listen to it all the time, but I appreciate it. My favorite movie is Amadeus. So.
Okay, so the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra is going to be marking their 100 years with a free day of music and Star Wars concerts.
Well, they will be doing that, yeah.
They will be doing that.
Yeah, it's one of the things they'll be doing. What else are they going to be doing, Travis?
Well, the 2018-19 season marks the 100th anniversary. We said that already. They'll be hosting a free music day on January 26, 2019, which marks the exact anniversary of the first ever VSO performance way back in 1919.
It's a long time ago.
It's before I was born.
Before my grandpa was born.
Before my great-grandpa was born.
Mm.
No. Well, one of them.
One of them?
One of them.
No.
Yeah. This year also includes more live-to-picture performances, including one for Star Wars, A New Hope, La La Land, and the new installment of the Harry Potter concert series.
I definitely want to see the Star Wars one. I'm a pretty big Star Wars fan. I especially love the Binary Suns theme. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, that's that scene in A New Hope where Luke Skywalker is looking out on the twin sunset of his home planet Tatooine. It's one of those perfect music movie moments that gives me chills, and anyone who saw The Last Jedi kind of has even more weight to it, too. The free day that they're planning on hosting on January 26th is a mere 342 days away, so be sure to get your ticket now.
Just mark that off in your little day planner.
Yes, or on your phone.
The whole day.
I mean, I can't be the only one who uses a day planner, but maybe that's just me.
I believe it's called an agenda.
Yeah, I guess.
I guess.
A duotang? No, that's different. Anyhow. So this one is final piece of news that we wanted to go over that kind of segues nicely into our concert listings for the week. Well, into it. The Rise and Shine Festival is to take place February 25th and 26th. This is an event designed to showcase all the talented artists within the Vancouver urban creative community, with a focus on R&B, rap, and dance music, with a greater goal on finding ways to strengthen the scene, which we at PSR, Pacific Sound Radio, which is what you're listening to, can get behind. Mm-hmm. Some of the artists and collaborators featured include Imur, I-M-U-R, I think that's how you pronounce that, mm-hmm. Prado, So Loki, Timber Concerts, Blueprint, Nina Mendoza, and many more. This is an all-ages event that'll be held at Fortune Sound Club, and I've been to a number of Fortune Sound Club shows, and I have to say their sound system is fantastic, so it's going to sound great. Mm-hmm. You can register in advance through their Facebook page, so that's Rise and Shine Festival.
All right, in other news, in our last news story, is 6BC bands are going to be playing the Folk Alliance International and Breakout West Showcase.
They're actually there already.
They're already?
Yes.
Okay. BC, well represented this week at the Folk Alliance International Showcase in Kansas City.
Missouri. MO short for Missouri.
Missouri.
Yeah.
And the modus operandi?
The MO of Missouri.
Yeah, so you got Deli to Dublin, Jody Peck, Larissa Tandy, Oliver Swain, Sarah Jane Scouten, and the Fugitives all in attendance. I like Deli to Dublin.
Yeah, my mom loves that band.
Yeah.
I should listen to them. And now we're swinging into concert listings. So, on February, we're going to go through the first two for February 22nd. So on February 22nd, Kelarissa opens for the Softies, and Lisa Frank is part of the Girls Rock Camp Vancouver fundraiser at the Fox Cabaret.
Anthems and Indications open for Typesetter at the Cobalt.
On February 23rd, Prairie Cat open for Doug Tuttle and Sam Cogan at the Fox Cabaret.
All right, February 24th, you have Vanek at the Commodore Ballroom. Local DJ Vanek, he was recently purchased and
featured.
He's recently purchased by Forbes.
He purchased Forbes. He's on the up and up.
Yeah, he was recently featured in Forbes magazine as a breakout electronic artist you need to know, and Forbes is definitely my go-to place for music advice. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, I usually swing for GQ when I'm looking for music advice, or Cosmo.
Yeah. Emily in the Headlights with Whelming, Gulo, and Adam Rosenthal are playing the Railway Stage. That's also on February 24th.
On February 25th, Phoenix Warren is playing the Railway Stage with Sam Lynch, Molly Aspinall, and Bree McDaniel. And now we are going to go into our second headliner single for this episode. So our next single comes from one of the more successful acts to break out of the Vancouver music scene in the past few years. I'm, of course, talking about the husband-wife synth-pop duo Dear Rouge. Danielle and Drew McTaggart are back with a slinky, commanding new track off of their upcoming second full-length album, Phases, coming out March 9th. This is Modern Shakedown.
You treat my heart, it can go. Threw me out with your reputation. 40 days in the cold. Hey now, I'm heading for a breakdown. For your cheap affection, you wanna pass for your crime. Hey now, I'll put you in your place now. Hands up, it's the breakdown. Wake up,
yeah,
it's a modern shakedown.
Welcome back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was the latest single from Dear Rouge, Modern Shakedown. I'm James.
And I'm Travis. And to your right, we have our guest
Ian Cromwell. Yeah, so on this installment of Musician Guide, we will be discussing the importance of marketing and branding for musicians and anyone else involved in the music industry, including producers, promoters, and photographers, just to name a few. In our previous installment, we talked about music streaming, and we brought our producer, Jaden Fraze, on, and today brought back Ian Cromwell, someone that regular listeners should recognize. He's a talented musician in his own right and the creator of a unique monthly event called Locals Lounge. Thanks for coming on, Ian.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So for listeners who don't know, can you give us a brief rundown of what Locals Lounge is?
Absolutely. Locals Lounge is a monthly live interview local music series. The idea is to give the audience a chance to meet the human beings behind Vancouver's music scene. There's a lot of really cool stories in this city, and we're trying to tell them.
That's great. And how did Locals Lounge get started?
I was offered a chance to put together a live music night by the folks at the Belmont Bar, which is our host and sponsor. And I've been involved in the music scene for a few years now, and there are some really, really cool people who I've gotten the chance to get to know. But if you're not a musician and you don't know sort of who's around, you will only get to see the talented side of things. But there's also really cool and very human stories behind all of the songs, all of the music that you hear. And so it was an opportunity, I thought, for us to tell our own stories and to sort of spread some of that community a bit more broadly.
So kind of in a way similar to, because there's very similar things that have been done in other parts, I think, hosted by MTV and Much Music and stuff like that. But like, I guess storytellers would be a similar example.
Sure, or like Intimate and Interactive, if you remember from way back in the Much Music days, or Elvis Costello actually had a show called Spectacle, where he would do almost exactly, well, we basically just ripped him off.
That's okay. Elvis Costello, I think he lives here, too. You should try and have him on.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't.
Is he married to Sarah McLachlan? No. Might be, no?
It's Diana Krall.
Diana Krall, I knew it was like, yeah. Somebody.
One of those music ladies.
One of those music ladies that my mom likes.
Hey, you should like Diana Krall. She's the boss.
Oh, I know she's a good singer. But when it comes to the broader perspective, how do you market an event such as Locals Lounge? Like, what do you find has been most effective? What do you take? What approaches do you use before that you had to, like, readjust? What's the process been like?
So the basis for my event is human interaction, connection from person to person. And so that's been broadly the method that we've used. A lot of it has to do with word of mouth, about just getting people excited about the idea, talking to them directly about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And that seems to get the biggest buy-in. I mean, there's, and I know we're probably going to talk about this a bit, there's quite a great deal of social media that goes along with that, but the core basis of it is connecting people with the idea of what we're doing. Because most people like stories, and most people think music is cool, and let's find out more about it. Why not? Let's go to Belmont Bar. That's kind of the general track.
Mm-hmm. And how did you come up with the logo and design, like overall brand for Locals Lounge?
My role in Locals Lounge, I might sort of title that I've given myself, is curator. And what that means is that I'm not the boss. I'm not running it. What I am doing is creating a space for creative people to do their work. And so early on in the process, I was working with a graphic designer and photographer and videographer named Julian Harris, and he and I had a series of conversations about what do we want to see, what's the mood that we want to strike, what's the tone that we want to set for this event. And from there, he went and did the design stuff. And that's generally the approach that I take with most of the artists that I work with, because Locals Lounge is a team of creative folks, and I give them a lot of, like, a really, really long leash, because they're the experts and I'm not. And so it's about letting creative people be creative and having that be what they get to do, rather than me trying to tell them how to do their jobs.
Yeah, fair enough. And one thing, I think when Jaden and Travis and I first met with you, you mentioned that part of the process has been involved with building the right team. And what was that process like for you?
There's been ups and downs for sure. I think for anyone who's listening who is thinking about starting up any kind of creative project, any kind of business, anything that they're going to be doing in collaboration with other people, the stuff that matters is the stuff that's hard to see on a resume. Whether or not they're trustworthy, whether or not they're honest, whether or not they're going to follow through on the things that they say they're going to do, that is, I would say, in my experience, more important than whether or not they're going to knock your socks off with the quality of their work. Because a person who you can't rely on, but who's really talented, is still a person that you can't rely on. And so, again, it comes down to that human connection factor. You've got to find people who you like working with. And I'm lucky that I found that group of folks, and we're building something fun together.
That's fantastic. And, yeah, I'd agree that that's that. Finding the right people that you can connect with and you can work with well and in a productive fashion that really allows you to achieve the goals that everyone wants to achieve in the most effective manner is super important.
Yeah.
Putting this in a broader sense, how important is it for serious artists beyond just music, be it any sort of creative endeavor, to develop a brand and identity and market that appropriately?
Whoa. So what is going on?
We've got some drama outside the studio. Gosh.
Two cops chasing.
They're
somebody.
Running. He's got a thing.
Oh crap! Ooh.
This has turned into a very serious show right now. There's some
scared behind the van.
Oh,
holy moly!
Okay, well, for those of you who can't see what's happening, yeah, which is everyone who's listening to this,
there is a gigantic police incident going on right in front of the studio window. We're okay, but there is now two, three police cars.
There's
and
a
multiple,
taser involved.
Yep.
Yeah.
It looks like they have it under control, but yeah, it's pretty nuts.
Interesting times.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was
yeah.
So
all right. So it looks like that,
which brings me, I think, very
so
importantly
we're
to
yeah, we're laughing because we have our
branding.
Yeah. Okay.
For those of you can't see, Tom is currently running away.
Tom's trying to get a good photo advantage.
Our featured
that's
guest is running out the door. No, it's all good. I guess.
yeah. It's, so the social media.
Social yes. media branding.
First thing I thought was take a picture.
I think we live in this really interesting age, because the internet has become just part of how everything works. And what it means is that it's never been cheaper or easier for musicians to do the kinds of things that they used to have to get signed to labels to do. If you wanted a press packet, if you wanted to get the word out about you, you had to have some money behind you because that stuff costs money. But an Instagram account is free. A Facebook page is free. All of that stuff is free. So it's great for artists, but it's also terrible for artists because it's harder and harder to distinguish yourself. There are lots of people who have lots of great content, and you have to find a way for yours to break through. So I think for aspiring artists and the sort of tactic that I'm using is, again, it comes down to that human connection bit about developing real relationships with people. Everyone attends to the media part of the equation, but not so much the social part. Social media is about sharing information and sharing ideas and sharing content with people and developing real relationships. And so the key to building your brand is making sure that people are connecting with it, not just because it's whiz bang, wow, it's cool looking, but also because they care about the person behind the account.
Absolutely. I guess, and this ties into something I wanted to ask you about, what you do yourself as a musician. How do you market yourself, and what are some of the common mistakes that you've seen artists and bands make when trying to market a show or a new release or even just building their brand? I mean, obviously, one I can think of is just not networking properly.
Right. Definitely not networking properly or not recognizing that human connection. If you are essentially a spam account, if all that you do is send people stuff saying, I want you to do this for me, I want you to come to this show, I want you to pay attention to my latest single, I want you to do this, I want you to do that, you become just another source of advertising. And people are pretty good at tuning out ads.
Absolutely.
So if you're a spam, even though you're a person, you're still spam.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I think, the biggest mistake that I see people make. I was at the Eastman flea market, Eastside flea market, a couple weeks ago, and I took some pictures of some objects that I saw that were pretty, like, profoundly racist.
I saw that post.
And somebody, a musician from Ireland, put up a comment on my page, because I hashtag a lot of my stuff when I post it, my music stuff, but I hashtag it separately. This wasn't hashtag with music. This was just a post. And his bot had gone through my account and randomly selected a post to say, oh, beautiful, check out my page too. Except that he did that on the photo of the racist thing.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, I don't think that's what you really want your bot to be doing. So please stop using bots, and please stop leaving single emoji comments. It's worthless, and it makes me hate you.
Sad face.
Yeah, turd emoji, right?
Turd
there.
Emoji. Yeah,
that's what that
no,
is.
No, that that surprises me. I mean, obviously, some people must get numbers from bots, but I'm surprised that they're used, because it's so
impersonal.
Well, it's so impersonal and kind of nakedly cynical from a. From a marketing perspective, I suppose.
But at the same time, I mean, you put up a billboard. Like, a company puts up a billboard. That's cynical, and that's fine, because we expect companies to broadcast at us. What we don't expect is for human beings to do the same thing. And I think that's what people get into trouble, is that they think that they are a company. They think that they are broadcast. They think that they are media, when what they are is social. And that's where the focus, I think, where the focus should be. Once you have people who are already connected with you and want to see what you're doing, then you can build on that. And then you can turn it more into, these are my shows and whatever, but you have to keep that core of this. You have to give some, you have to give people a reason to want to see the stuff that's on your account. And if it's at all, if all it is ads, then they won't.
For sure. And tying into that with bots and spam posting and stuff like that, if you're, an artist or you're in a band and you're trying to promote an event or a new release, what's your perspective on volume of posts and how to go about doing that? Because obviously you want to get the word out, but as you mentioned, you don't want to, you don't want to turn people off by being too annoying.
Right. I think, So what, when we book these events and what we tell the guests that come our way is that that reaching out individually to say, I'm doing this, this is something that matters to me, this is something that I would really appreciate you being there, goes a lot longer, goes a lot farther than just blasting the information out there. And I think that there isn't a right way or a wrong way to do things. And I'm not going to pretend like I've unlocked the secret, because, I mean, I still have to hassle people to get to our events. But it's also really important to remember that these are human beings, and no bot, no script, no ad is going to ever be able to replace the feeling of having someone talk to you as another person. That's got to be the basis of everything, especially something creative.
For sure, and I think that's a good takeaway there. I guess when it comes to, and I suppose I'll frame it in terms of how you approach Locals Lounge, what do you feel in terms of types of content that should always be included in a social media post? I mean, the ask is usually a huge go-to.
I mean, so there's the ask, and there's also the why you care about this. I think that's the other part of it. For stuff like Instagram, it has to be an arresting image. You have to show them something that they're going to stop scrolling and take a look at. And then from there, you got to hit them with the, this is why you care about this. This is why this is relevant to you. Not why I think this is cool, but why you should think this is cool. And again, it comes down to that human to human connection, is why are you giving people this information? Are you doing it for their benefit or for yours?
And the focus should be more on, would you say, for their benefit or a mutual benefit?
Well, one would hope that you're putting out something that they will benefit from.
Yes.
And that you will, you know, that your their presence will improve. But if you're asking somebody for something, you should probably be doing it because in a way that honors their wishes and their preferences.
Absolutely. So where can people find out more about Locals Lounge?
The easiest way to do that is to find us on Facebook at Locals Lounge Vancouver. They also have an Instagram account, which is at Locals Lounge. We're going to be having our next event this coming Sunday, February 25th. You're going to be hearing soon from our guest this month, Tom Van Dersen, and I'll let you guys do the whole intro, but I'll just throw it out there that I am a huge fan of Tom. He's a really cool guy and a wonderful musician, and it's going to be a really, really fun night. I hope you can be there. We have Chelsea D.E. Johnson opening, who is one of the most phenomenal vocalists I've ever heard. It's going to be a fun night. I really hope you make it.
Fantastic. And when does the event start?
Doors open at the Belmont Bar on Granville Street at Nelson at 6:30. Music starts right at 7.
Fantastic. Thank you again, Ian. This won't be the last time that we'll have you on. So segueing into our featured guest that Ian just talked about, this is a track from Tom Van Dersen's Small Town Artillery album. This is off their debut record. This is Honestly.
Hands and good.
right, and that was Honestly by Small Town Artillery. I just found out from Ian off the air that that song has been entered into the CBC Searchlight Contest. So, in the studio today, on this installment of Pacific Sound Radio, we have Tom Van Derzen, who is the leader, singer, songwriter, lead guitarist for the funk rock band Small Town Artillery.
Yeah.
He also plays guitar in the modern soul R&B unit, the Boom Booms, and is headlining next week's Locals Lounge event on February 25th at the Belmont. He is the one and only Tom Van Derzen that I've said before. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, man. Good to be here. Mm-hmm. We just saw some drama go down outside with a total of seven police cruisers.
Seven police cars. Our conjecture is that the law enforcement is trying to catch a specific individual who might have been giving them some grief, potentially.
But yeah, big takedown.
Big takedown.
Did he see the guy running away from the cops? He knew it was going to happen. He kind of like had a half smile, like, okay, I hope this doesn't hurt.
I feel like from this vantage point, there's something new every day, you know? Yes. You never know what you're going to see. There's a lot of life down here.
There is a lot of life.
For better and worse.
For better or worse, yeah. I guess really want to go all the way back to the beginning, Tom. What was it like growing up in Castlelaw, B.C.?
Incredible. I was actually born here in East Vancouver.
Okay.
Immediate family, embryo of four people. So my mom, my dad, my younger brother Derek, who also plays drums in Small Town Artillery, and myself. And then when I was six and my brother was four, we relocated to the Kootenays. So I spent from 6 to 18 those years of my life there.
Wow, formative.
Very formative, yeah, like when all the brain cells are developing and when you're developing as a person. I got to do it in the country, and I'm so grateful for that.
Was that your parents' decision? Was that like a work thing for them, or was it more like, screw this city, we want to get out into the country because it's better out there?
All three of those things are correct.
Okay.
It was their decision, and there was a good job offer for my dad, who's a carpenter and handyman of all trades, Paul, wonderful man. And my aunt and uncle, George and Irene, they owned a mill out there. So we started by living on their property, and dad worked for them, and then got our own house, and he started contracting out, and yeah, and they wanted to get out of the city and raise their kids in beautiful bosom of British Columbia.
And what a bosom it was.
Indeed. Yeah, a fine bosom, the Kootenays.
Now, are you currently living in Vancouver, or are you, kind of closer to that community?
I have really close ties with the Kootenays. I always try and take whatever band I can convince to leave home back to Caslow and Nelson to play. And I love it up there, but I've lived in East Van for 10-plus years now.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So when you were growing up there, when did you get into music, and you know, what was your experience like trying to get a band together in a small community?
Great question. I took piano lessons when I was, I think, 8 or 9, and I only took 2 of them. And I really didn't like it at all, because my teacher was a much older lady. Her name was Agnes, and she lived in a...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I'm picturing her right now.
Yeah, you can see her, right?
The horn-rimmed glasses.
Yes. Yeah.
Tom, you're not doing it right.
Yeah, you make your hands like igloos. And she's a sweet woman, but I just wasn't down to learn. And I remember her saying that, make your hands like igloos to play the piano, and it hurt my fingers. And so I stopped, and then... I was at the Caslow Jazz Festival, which is a great festival that they've been doing for almost 30 years now, I do believe. And when I was 11 and I saw Colin James play.
Hmm.
And he started guitar soloing and he leapt off the floating stage and he was running through the sea of people. And
oh my gosh.
Just ripping this repeater like. And
the widdly woo.
The widdly woodly widdly woodly, yeah, wanking as they call it.
Love that phrase.
To wank, yeah. But he ran right by me, and a dream was literally born right there. The light bulb went on, and I went, I'm going to be a musician. And I knew it in that moment that I was going to learn to play the guitar.
And how old were you when that happened?
I was 11 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that ties into a question that I wanted to ask you was, Colin James, I imagine... You know, the initial spark. But what guitarists inspired your playing when you were first starting learning to play the instrument? And what guitarists continue to inspire you?
First part of the question, the answer is unequivocally Ian Dessau from the band Billy Talent.
That was my first show, actually.
Mine too.
Yeah, went with my sister and my mom.
You weren't at the Croatian...
My mom was confused.
You weren't at the Croatian Cultural Center, were you?
No, that was for Billy Talent's big... Pacific Coliseum tour for Billy Talent 2 in 2007.
Wicked. Yeah. Also,
that was a good,
first
good lineup, too. It was Monin, Rise Against, Anti-Flag, and Billy Talent.
Wow. So. Fist in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It was Ian. I love those riffs. And I love the songwriting, and I just loved melodic, heavy rock and roll.
I've always found that with Ian, his tone has been the most signature thing about his playing.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't know about you, but one of my favorite guitar solos, just in terms of how immaculately it's constructed, is from Fallen Leaves.
Yes.
Because it sticks in your mind forever. Yeah. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, and then currently, oh man, it's all over the map. I really like everything Jack White does. Everything he touches is gold. I love Radiohead. I love Kings of Convenience. You ever listen to them? They're a folk duo.
I haven't heard of them, actually.
They both play acoustic guitar, and they have these like intertwining, really beautiful sort of pick-through acoustic patterns and phrases that I really like. Five Alarm Funk.
Oh, well. That's
massive
one
fan.
Of the dreams is to have them on the show. I'm not sure if we could fit all of them in the studio, but we'd try.
I feel like you could. And I hope you take a picture when
we'd
do.
Get some great great photos. I think it would almost be like the building would collapse because of how amazing it would be.
Yeah, it would shake the foundation.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch your face.
Boom.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
And when did you start writing songs, and was there any any bands that are like, I like what this band is doing, this band is doing, this band is doing, I want to do this sort of band?
Billy Talent? Yeah, at the beginning. The first 5 years was just, I don't know, it was an obsession. I learned all their riffs, learned them note for note, and then started writing my own songs that were only slightly different from theirs.
Only slightly.
Yeah, and like, you know, mashing the MIDI drums, the computer drums, just going, and then I'd drop some kind of riff over it, and was a really terrible singer at the beginning.
Mm.
And and then bands like Fat Freddy's Drop. You ever heard of them?
I haven't heard of them either. I'm usually good about this stuff.
They're a New Zealand band, and I think they're a 10 or 11 piece, and it's super.
That's legally a village in New Zealand. Right? Like, they run their own farm.
They're an entire pueblo. Yeah, yeah, they're fantastic.
That's great. I need to ask this question more often, but do you remember your first band and what that experience was like?
Yeah, we were called Carnival Red, and I don't know what the name means, but I like the cadence.
Mm. And was it Carnival with a K?
No, it was a C. It was the classic spelling,
the
regular way.
Not the 90s extreme.
Not like the Cardinal Fischel. And we were a quartet, me and my younger brother, and then another pair of brothers named Robin and Jeremy, Mercy Ross, bass, guitar, and then I played guitar, sang, and my brother played drums. And we threw our own shows at the high school, and I think we were one of the first bands in Caslow to ever do that, go and promo and poster and take over the like smaller of the two gyms in our tiny, tiny rural high school and throw rock shows.
The high school, or was there more than one in the city?
There's city, just town. One town. It's Caslow has about 1,000 people in it.
Yeah, it's a hamlet almost.
Is it incorporated? It does have a mayor. It has a mayor,
yeah.
But just barely big enough for that. Mm. So there's one school that services all of the surrounding legitimate hamlets, like the tiny little settlements. So everyone collects to this one school, and even with that, it's about 300 kids from kindergarten to grade 12. So class sizes are remarkably small. You know, you'll have 20 to 25 people in a grade, which is great because you all get to know each other and you're able to learn better with less people in the room.
Do you find, with such a smaller community, does that foster a stronger sense of camaraderie, or does it make it worse if you don't like somebody? I'm like, I'm stuck with this guy for 12 years of my life.
A bit of both.
He stole my crayons, and I've hated him ever since.
Yeah, he took the orange crayon, and I'll never
that rat
let him
bend
it down. Yeah, I think if you do, it is easy to be ostracized by your tiny community, especially if you're a bit of a social outcast like I tended to be in high school. But, you know, when it is functioning, if you take a cross-section of 30 people who are the same age, you're very likely to have a wide variety of skills and interests, and there's a high potential there to create a family. And so each grad class felt like a family. Like, I still keep in close touch with a lot of the people I graduated with. And I think in bigger schools, like some of the members of the Boom Booms went to Van Tech. And, you know, there's 3,000 kids in that school. And so grad classes are in the hundreds. And so you can't know everybody. Like, mm-hmm. you sat beside someone in science forever. And
some admirers.
Yeah, hello there.
Keep going, though, Tom. We don't want to be too distracted.
I'm just now posing. I like his pink cell phone case.
Oh, that's a great cell phone case.
Yeah. Where'd you grow up?
Oh, me? Well, I guess we'll...
Surrey.
Yeah, kinda I'm also Surrey. Surrey.
Yeah, moved around a lot.
What school did you go to, Travis?
High school?
Yeah.
Elementary school?
Yeah, we'll go with high school.
Clayton Heights.
Okay.
Yeah.
I went to...
Panorama?
To Manowis for 2 years and then Panorama for three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how many kids are in each of those schools?
Ooh, a lot.
I think they had like 500. No, wait. I don't know. I feel like it was less than 1,000.
Yeah.
I've read that Surrey School District is the biggest in Canada, just in terms of the volume of schools and I guess students enrolled.
Yeah.
I believe that.
When I went, it was a pretty new school still. I think it was like in its sixth year.
Mm-hmm.
Still, so like now there's like 20 portables because they didn't make it big enough, and there's just nothing but houses near it now.
Yeah, wow.
There's an elementary school near my place. It looks like a high school. It's gigantic.
Wow.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Can you imagine all those, like, you know, however old you are, what are you, 6 to 12? Like thousands of 6 to 12 year olds together, and you change so much.
You do
between those ages. Mm-hmm. From, you know, motor functions are just developing to you're fully in the swing of puberty and everything's all screwed up.
And just madness going on.
Why are you going to take me seriously?
Oh, I hope Becky likes me.
I hope she does. She makes me so nervous.
So, I guess, did I already ask that? I'm not sure.
Let's find out.
When did you start writing songs? I know it was, you know, that probably that first band, but was that, you know, straight after seeing Colin James, I'm doing that, or was there some time before you decided, yeah, I'm going to seriously start writing my own stuff and giving this a go?
Yeah, there's probably a year where I just learned kind of how to play the guitar before I could really put things together. And Derek and I, we wrote instrumental, really simple instrumental tunes together as a duo. And so before I ventured into the realm of lyric writing and poetry, we were strictly an instrumental duo, and we really sucked, but we really tried hard. Just posing for another photo. this is a high media.
Yeah.
High media account today.
We're getting all sorts of photos today.
Hello, Vancouver.
Hello. And I guess when it comes to that, because you mentioned Carnival Red was the first band, how did Small Town Artillery get its start? And from what I understand, you've been playing with Derek pretty much the entirety of your music career.
Yeah, so I guess that's about 18 years, quarter of a lifetime, if you're lucky. Small Town Artillery was the grown-up version of our youthful rock endeavors. We both moved to Vancouver, but we were staggered 2 years apart because I'm 2 years older and I graduated. Mm-hmm. And then he was still in Caslow for two more years. So it was during that time that I joined a band called the Boom Booms and started playing with them. When he came down, we started jamming again. So that, I guess, would have been in 2009. But we didn't really have a band name, and we kind of identified ourselves as Small Town Artillery about 7 years ago, but we didn't play very much at all. And this is before we had a horn section and before we had a committed lineup or any music recorded. And we used to play at this Ethiopian restaurant called Nyala, which is out on like 30th and Main. And it's closed now, but the owner, Asifa, He saw us and he took us in and gave us a regular Monday night gig as a duo.
That's pretty rad.
For months and months. And we'd eat delicious Ethiopian food and make probably 20 or 30 bucks each. And our friends would come out and they get drunk and we get drunk and we play. And he kept saying to me, he said, I know. He's like, I keep hiring you back because I know you're going to make it. You know, he believed in us barely 20-year-old kids then. And I haven't seen him in years. And so if he hears this, thank you, Asifa, for your faith.
Yeah, hopefully he's opened up another restaurant, because I know there's a few different Ethiopian places on Commercial Drive. One that's wonderfully named Harambe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they renamed it afterwards or before. But anyhow. So I guess that ties in, kind of gives me a bit clearer idea of the timeline. How do you get connected with the Boom Booms?
I left home when I was 18 to come to Vancouver, and I wanted to do music. I'd been playing every day at home and putting together high school bands. So I came here, you know, with the hopes to kind of get things set up for when Derek arrived 2 years later to join me again on drums. But I came here and I moved with my buddy, a good buddy of mine named Stefan Weaver, and we moved into a basement suite in East Van, and we smoked weed and ate Reese's Peanut Butter Cups for 3 months, and I spent my whole savings. And I didn't play any music.
It's a lot of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
It was an absurd amount. Yeah. we had them hidden all over the apartment so that we'd forget where they were and then find them as a surprise. It was a whole thing.
Especially after, you know, hooting a bowl. Just, well, it's in my yeah. pocket, man.
Yeah, it was like finding the one ring each time, you know. It was a big deal.
Oh, my gosh.
But so I did that for 3 months and really was kind of depressed and lonely and had no direction, didn't know many people here. I have some great family here, but I didn't have any friends, really. And so spent my savings, and then I retreated home with my tail between my legs. And I stayed at home, and the first week I was back home, my cousin Bubba Brinkman came through town. And he was touring his hip-hop science show. And he's also comes from a long lineage of tree planters. And he said, you need direction in your life, man. You should go tree planting. My brother Eric's got a camp, and he'll take you on as a greener.
I actually had a few fraternity brothers who did that as summer jobs.
Nice. Yeah, it goes well with university.
School years. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I said yes. And I remember sitting on the steps at a party at my aunt's house, and I got the text from Eric, who is Bubba's brother and the boss of this planting camp. He said, are you in or you're out? Are you in or are you out? I need to know right now. And I remember that being a pivotal moment in my life, because I was nervous because I heard a lot of nasty things about planting and I was young. But I said, yeah, I'll do it. And I went and I met three of the five Boom Booms there. And they were just beginning to form a band.
Mm.
And I brought my electric guitar into bush camp and my amp. And there was one outlet in the mess tent, and I would use it after everyone was done charging their phones at the end of the night, and I'd play, like, rock and metal riffs out in the forest on a generator power. And after a couple weeks of that, the Aaron, who's the lead singer and frontman for the Boom Booms, he approached me, and he said, do you want to move into my mom's attic and join our band that we're just starting? We want to travel the world and make, you know, funk, reggae, soul, Latin music.
Wow.
I said, yeah. And then history happened, and it's been 10 years in that band now.
That's a fantastic story, and I love those little cosmic episodes where everything just lines up perfectly.
Me too.
Yeah.
I got lucky.
And I guess when it comes to Small Town Artillery, do you and your brother write the majority of the songs in the band?
Yeah. Yeah, I write the majority of the basic, you know, chords, lyrics, general feel. And usually come to the group with a rough idea of what I want. And I have some brilliant musicians in my band. Derek, as I mentioned, Carson Weber on bass, who's the most solid dude I know, a phenomenal bass player. And so the trio stands up my acoustic songs, makes them into rock or funk tunes or whatever. And then phase three is bring in the horn section, and we write lines together. Either they come up with something or I come up with something, try and make it anthemic and awesome, and then those are the layers of the cake, my man.
That's great. So it's it is kind of collaborative in a way that you and your brother bring in the skeletal structure, and then everything's kind of filled in by everyone else.
Yeah, that's more or less correct.
And what's it like playing in a band with your brother? As you mentioned, you've been playing in a in various bands with him for almost 20 years, but drawing from experience that our producer Jaden and I can attest to, we played in a we actually first met through a band that we played in together. That was the other half of the band was a pair of brothers.
Okay,
and sometimes that can pose some unique challenges because you know how siblings can be. So, mm-hmm. What's that been like?
It's been great. I'm really lucky to have a close, healthy relationship with my little bro. And I think that goes back to growing up in such a rural environment because our house was so removed from other people that, you know, we played with each other and hung out with each other constantly. And we're very rarely distracted by outside forces for a lot of our formative years. Mm-hmm. And then we fell in love with music at the same time. As soon as I said, I'm going to be a guitar player, you know, he said, well, it makes logical sense. I should play the drums. I don't know if he used the word logical, but it was a logical decision. And, there's something really magic about playing with a sibling that you've been playing with for so long, because there's a connection in the eye contact and the subliminal understanding of what the other person's eyes and body language are saying. And so I love playing with Derek because I can look him in the eye and convey a message relatively quickly and honestly without, you know, having to yell across the stage too much. Although, Derek, I do yell at you sometimes, and I'm sorry. I love you, man. But, yeah, I love it. And in the Boom Booms, there's siblings, too, Sean and Aaron, and they have the same connection with each other. Their voices blend well, and they interact with each other well on stage.
It's good to hear.
Yeah.
So before we move on to our next batch of songs, we'd love to hear a song. Our next batch of questions, we'd like to hear a song.
Sure.
In my words.
This song is called Batch of Questions.
No.
should I lower the mic so it can kind of pick up a bit of both?
It picks up the guitar sounds pretty good with the room.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it should be good and we'll record it out.
So I'm going to kick it off with a cover by Mr. Jack White. From his early White Stripes days. One of my favorite little ditties is called Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground.
Ooh, nice.
When I know you're not around, shiny tops and soda pops. When I hear your lips make a sound, yeah, when I hear your lips make a sound. Soft hair and a velvet touch on, and give you what you give to me. And every breath that is in your lungs is a tiny little gift to me. Oh, it's a tiny little gift to me, yeah. Can you imagine really heavy drums right here? If you can hear a piano fall, you can hear me coming down the hall. If I could just hear your pretty voice, I don't think I need to see it all. I don't think I need to see it all. Soft hair and a velvet touch, I wanna give you what you give to me. And every breath that is in your lungs is a tiny little gift to me. It's a tiny little gift to me. So bad till the sun went down. Oh. Then I come home. It's no wonder that my arms are bound. No wonder wrap my arms around. Any man with a microphone can tell you what he loves the most. And you don't know how to love at all. And you're thinking on the Holy Ghost. When you're thinking on the Holy Ghost.
That was great. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, man. I sang the second verse twice just because I really like it.
I think maybe one or maybe a couple White Stripes fans who are listening in might have noticed, or maybe not. Whatever.
Yeah.
So, sorry. When it comes to, you know, you've got Small Town Artillery and the Boom Booms.
Yep.
How do you manage juggling two bands?
Right now it's at a pretty healthy place. I mean, everyone in Small Town Artillery knows that we are not able to go on long tours and be away for long periods of time, which works with everyone in the band, because my brother is a high school teacher. My bass player has two other fantastic bands, so he's juggling three groups.
Oh, wow.
And a lovely wife and a job. Yeah, he plays in Year of the Wolf and The Long War. Who were last year's CBC Searchlight winners. Yeah. So he's really busy right now. And I wouldn't play with another bass player than him. He's got the fire and the funk, so...
Sounds like that means when we saw Small Town Artillery about... At the Rickshaw opening for JP Maurice, your bassist was pulling double duty that night.
Yeah, and we actually did a tour last summer where all three of his bands, we took them on the road. So we did 10 shows in 10 days all over BC. So he played 3 sets a night. So he played 30 shows in 10 days.
I guess if he uses his fingers for fingering, and there's no nicer way to put that, I'm sorry. he's fingering the bass. I imagine he'd have to put them on ice after every show because his hands might fall off.
He's tough, man. I don't know. He never seems to be too tired. And he has a tattoo of each of those bands' logo on his knuckles.
Ooh.
He's in, man. So, and the Boom Booms is such an entity. Like, we've been together for 10 years, and we've done the old school approach of hitting the road, like, incessantly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a good following, a healthy following, and we're a band that gets out and plays all the time. And so around this time of year, our summer starts to get booked up, and I kind of leave my weekends from mid-April to mid-October free, and so it's only after the Boom Boom schedule is booked that I go, okay, where are the pockets? And then I call Small Town and I go, let's see what we can cook up. And the last 3 years I've asked the Boom Booms for 1 week or 2 weekends and the week in between each summer off so that I can go on the road with STA. And so far that's worked, but I think our summer's going to be even busier this year, so I don't know if that's going to happen. But I don't know, it's a healthy balance, because I get to... Some of the things I write don't fit with the Boom Booms, and so I love having the rock and roll outlet for the heavier stuff, and also allows me to not try and force my rock and roll tendencies into a band that's not intrinsically rock.
Yeah, of course.
So it's healthier for both groups, and I think it's great. I think everyone should have a side project.
Yeah, I'd agree, if you can manage it.
Yeah, yes. Totally.
When it comes to kind of the other side of the coin, where we talked about how the writing process works with Small Town Artillery, what's the writing process like for the Boom Booms? Because you're the guitarist, I imagine that's a pretty big say in terms of song structure, at the very least.
Sure. I mean, for a long time it was a get in the jam space and fully democratic approach. You know, everyone had their own, an even share of the pie as far as opinion goes and influence. But each record with the Boom Booms, we've made a distinctively different way. The first one, called Hot Rum, which I still love that album. That one was a collection of songs that we just kind of jammed up and wrote, and Aaron had written some of them before, and we drove from here down to Panama and back. 6-month pilgrimage in an RV.
Oh my gosh.
And we played like 60-something shows at hostels and in people's backyards, and... that we booked, you know, when we would roll into these little pueblitos and towns and stuff. And so...
Well, you're playing the right music for some of those...
Totally.
Some of those little barrios.
Totally. We were doing Buena Vista Social Club covers and Manu Chao covers, and it was awesome, man. It was awesome. And so that album was just like that trip pressed onto CD. the next album, we had gotten some bigger festival gigs, and we'd played sort of larger stages, and we're feeling like, oh, we can be a bit slower and a bit heavier and a bit more interesting and kind of indulge ourselves. And then the third album was made over a year with a local producer, Grammy award-winning producer named Chin and Jetty. He's got a studio actually a couple blocks from here. Hi, Chin. And that was different. He broke the whole band down and kind of put us each in boot camp. He said, okay, you're going to go learn Rykooter riffs, and you're going to go be able to play like this on this R&B song and this funk song. Like, go look at the tones and go look at the parts and study music. And so that album was like a... I look at it as like going to school for the Funk and Soul Clinic. But it had a lot of sort of computer beats on it and synths and things that we weren't used to doing as a primarily live band.
Mm-hmm.
So that's three different experiences there. And then this last album, we rented a mansion in Comox for a month.
This is for A Million Miles?
This is for A Million Miles, okay. Yeah. And so we did all the pre-pro and a little bit of the record in this basement where we could make noise 24/7, and we had the ocean there, and it was pretty picturesque.
Was it haunted?
No, but I think we haunted it. By the end, we were pretty stir-crazy. You know, we'd been cooped up, five grown males living in a house in the woods. It's like, okay, we got to get out of here. Yeah.
It's like, this is going to turn into...
Someone's going to fight. A really bad... Something's going to explode, yeah.
It's going to turn into some sort of Stanley Kubrick movie by the end of this.
Yeah, so. Totally, yeah.
I guess it... trying to think, question I had about A Million Miles. From what, you know, I've listened to all three of the albums that you've put out so far. I really, really love A Million Miles. In fact, we included it as, well, I included it as one of my favorite local picks for our wrap-up episode that we did in December, and that was actually our first episode with this lovely gentleman, Travis Knoll, on board. And from what I, my big takeaway from A Million Miles was it felt like such a quantum leap for you guys, and it felt a lot more and I hope you don't take this as a diss, it felt a lot more modern than your previous two records. Was that kind of just a deliberate goal with you guys? It's like, hey, you know, we're in this wonderful space where we're kind of going through this golden age of R&B, let's try and like jump on that as well? Or
those are interesting questions. I think, well, what we did for that album is Aaron had voice memos of hundreds and hundreds of songs and hooks. And so when we, the first day when we got out to that mansion in Comox, he had categorized them, and he basically played us every single voice memo from the last 2 years of touring and hanging out and living. And we started making lists, and we narrowed it down to the 30 best songs in the group's opinion. And then we started standing those up slowly. And so we kind of approached each song individually. And that's why it's kind of an eclectic sounding album. You know, there's some world beat, and there's some kind of old dusty desert rock and roll, and there's some down-tempo R&B. And I think Sean joined the band in 2010, so he's been around for a long time. But by this point, by a couple years ago when we started doing A Million Miles, he had the synth arsenal getting pretty locked down. He'd become quite a proficient keyboard player and had a lot more sounds, and the things that he was gravitating to had a sort of R&B synthy modern edge to them. And a lot of the music we were listening to as a group was current. You know, we were listening to The Weeknd, and we were listening to a lot of bands that were in more pop realm but drawing a lot from R&B and soul. Yeah, it wasn't a conscious decision to make the album sound like it does, but it does have a sort of a polished, modern feel to it while still sounding like a band playing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, like everything sounds like, you know, as you mentioned, there's augmentation, as it were. Use that extremely unnecessarily fancy way to say synthy stuff.
Yeah.
But it very clearly sounds like a band. It isn't just your vocalist and a bunch of computer stuff backing them.
Yeah.
One question I did want to ask, who came up with the album cover? And for those who are listening, because obviously this is radio, the album cover for A Million Miles, the latest Boom Boom's record, is a, want to say, Atlantean sea monkey woman on a table eating fruit. And it's just this wonderful wonderful image that just gets burned in your brain the instant you've seen it. We'll definitely share an image of it at some point on our social media because it's just it's fantastic. Who came up with that? I got
to
ask.
So we listened to the album, you know, the premix is in their entirety, and we went, okay, what image does this conjure? And there's a song on the album called Other Side, and it's the opening, it's the first full-length track.
My favorite song
also
on
mine,
the album.
Also mine, for the record.
So good.
I love that tune. And it's the lyrics in it, I think Aaron accurately capture the sort of dystopian present that we live in with youth. You know, there's so many influences and directions you can go, and we're all trapped in our technology and we're having existential crisis and, you know, first world problems, you know, and there's a lot of therapy and we don't know what religion to turn to. We don't even know if religion is real and, you know, it's a very interesting time. And so the lyrics are kind of about that to me. And when we were discussing art concepts, Aaron came up with the idea of what about, you know, the image of a yellow alien who represents this outsider trying to find her place.
Okay, alien.
Alien.
That's the other way to view it.
Yeah.
I for whatever reason, thought some sort of aqua, underwater person.
She has a very amphibian look to
yes.
her. I totally get that as well. I get how you saw that. Yeah, and he's picturing yellow alien, green couch. And just that's the image that stuck in his mind. We all really liked that as a base concept for the art.
Mm-hmm.
And then we met up with our friend Job Pachi, who is a wonderful woman and model and has been a friend of especially Aaron and the Ross family, but the whole band for a long, long time. And we did a photo shoot where we took over 1,000 photos of her painted like that in various locations and trying to capture the concept was this alien comes to Earth and explode social media, you know, like people can't believe that there is actually extraterrestrial life and here she is, she's arrived. But then after a few months, because of the fickle nature of things on our phones, people stop caring, you know, they go, oh yeah, the alien, she's here. Yeah, no, she lives up on Boundary. And so we wanted to capture her in this apartment setting where she's kind of like joined Canadian culture, and she's walking around herself in her apartment on her phone, and she's doing the dishes and she's hanging out. And so we took a lot of shots in an apartment and a lot out in the woods. And when we were scrolling back through them as a band, that image that made the album cover, we all just stopped at it and we went, this is the most powerful picture of the 1,000. And so we picked it. That's the story.
That's amazing. Before we move on to our next batch of questions, we'd love to hear another song.
Sure. I'm going to play...
Ambulance drives by.
That's not the
fire
song.
Truck. That's not Ambulance, no.
Yeah, this song has 4 minutes of ambient downtown Eastside sounds.
Oh, boy.
So I'll just put our mics to the window here.
I think there's a Godspeed You Black Emperor song that literally starts that way.
Totally.
It's like, well, now I'm depressed.
This song, this is called Big Dreams, and bringing it back to STA now, this is off the brand new EP that's going to come out in the spring that we recorded at Blue Light Studios a couple weeks ago. So these songs aren't out yet, but this is an acoustic version of one of the tunes that I really like off that EP. And it's about following your heart and understanding and paying attention to the fire that you have inside you.
Fantastic. So an exclusive premiere only on Pacific Sound Radio.
That's it, man. Here we go. Another one is trying to take it off the line. I see that fire. I see your golden side. A rising sun, don't let nobody get it down. I speak that language. I will protect your crown. Your crown. The children of tomorrow can taste it on the wind. They watch our fire. They internalize it. So we must trust our instincts and let our love begin. To get inside it, well, you must go under skin one by one. They come
bigger dreams, and everyone needs some self-esteem. Believe you are worthy. When you're low, when you're low, hey, you got the goods, so now put in the work of my mind. Woo! Now, now, bigger dream. Now, now. Sunrise of your future is calling to you now. You feel the warmth on your skin, the honey in your mouth, and the ocean of infinite colors of your bow. You speak the language now and you start to write it down one by one. They come. Bigger dreams, and everyone needs some self-esteem. Worthy. When you're low, mama, when you're low, hey, you got the good, so now put in the work in my mind. Now, now, be the dream. Well, I am my father's boy, and I am my mother's son. This is why I get out of bed in the morning and try till the day is done. Yeah, I am my father's boy, and I am my mother's son. This is why I get out of bed in the morning and try till the days are done. Oh, yeah.
That was fantastic. That was Tom Van Dersen with a new song off of the upcoming Small Town Artillery EP. That was Bigger Dreams, right?
Big Dreams.
Big Dreams, yeah. Okay. Bigger's the sequel.
Bigger Dreams will be on the next EP.
There you go.
And then Biggest Dreams on the third.
Like the Nothing Else Matters part 2 and 3.
Exactly, yes. Thank you, Metallica. Yes,
the most unnecessary trilogy of songs in music history. Yeah, come at me, Lars.
That's funny, man.
So how far along are you with this new EP? Do you have a title? Plan for it, or are you still recording it, still writing it? What's going on?
Yeah, I haven't run this title by the band, but I want to call it Heartwake.
Not bad.
Because, I don't know, a lot of the songs on it come from going through a wonderfully intense relationship and difficult breakup. And so a lot of it is about that, and also just waking up. You know, each time you love or are lucky enough to love, you really go a little bit deeper into yourself. And so I feel like I often write from that place. And once I had been really heartbroken like that, I felt like a complete human being in a way. I felt like I had reached the top and the bottom of what it's possible to feel. And I like that, looking back. You know, I feel like that was a necessary emotional growth phase to go through. You know, went through a lot of dark times. And so just the awakening of the heart in that particular way. But hey, might call it something else. Who knows?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I guess in terms of arrangement, obviously, we're listening to that song. Obviously, since it's acoustic, it'll sound a bit differently when it's on the EP.
Sure.
But are you approaching this new EP in a different way than your previous album? Like, for example, listening to your previous release, I hear a lot of Rage Against the Machine and
yeah.
the guitar playing.
Yeah.
Are you doing something different with this one?
Yeah, there's one song that has a riff that I think Tom Morello would have liked on it, on the EP. But I really, these songs came acoustic first. They came strumming and singing and writing, and caring about the song first, and then brought them to the band. Whereas a lot of the songs off the previous album, the self-titled record, we jammed up as a group, you know, and I was writing the lyrics at the same speed as we were writing the arrangements. And so that felt like, you know, it's like, oh, what sick riff can we slam in here? And like, oh, you got a riff idea? Yeah, let's put it in. And like this one, I came with a more clear, like, these are the songs. And actually, my favorite tune on the new EP was written by our bass player, Carson Weber. He came up with the riff. And he went around to all his three bands and he showed all his three bands the riff. And we were the first ones to record it, so it's ours now. Ha ha! What's up, you're the wolf, and Long War, we got that riff.
Suckers.
Yeah. Yeah, but
they're all great.
Yeah. Earl Grey.
Earl Grey. What I love asking this question because everyone's got their own separate experiences when it comes to this. What's life been like on the road? Especially with, you know, the gigantic Boom Boom's 60 show tour, but, you know, by and large, what's your experience been like?
Traveling and touring is my favorite way to spend my time alive. I love moving through different cities. I love meeting new people. I love how vibrant life is in different parts of the world. And I think I've done the large majority of that with the Boom Booms, and traveling with a brotherhood as you grow into yourselves and become more comfortable as people and more comfortable with each other, get better as a band, the shows get better, and being able to have this 10-year period where we've been to Mexico, Central America, Brazil, we've been to Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, Haiti, the States, all across Canada, all across America, touring and traveling. And it really makes you a well-rounded human being, I think, and teaches you that there's so much more to life than what's at your front door or what's right outside. And I don't know. I love it. It can be exhausting. You know, it's hard to stay healthy all the time. But I think in popular rock and roll culture, it's less cool now to do a buttload of drugs and be a strung out skinny person and, you know, kind of an asshole. It's more like now you have to be, and it's better this way, but, you know, you're encouraged to be healthier and more community driven. And I see that across rock and roll and across touring bands. People still are escaping from their lives at home on the road to a degree, but I think people are a lot more dialed into health in general. I see a lot of bands doing yoga and taking care of themselves, and it shows in everyone's face, and the shows are better. And yeah, I think rock and roll is becoming a little less about excess and a little more about health and success.
Yeah, I'd agree with that sentiment. I mean, that was something that I kind of encountered when I was in high school listening to a lot of 90s bands, was a very strong deterrent, oddly enough, for, you know, staying away from, you know, hard substances like cocaine and heroin and the really nasty stuff, was, well, why would I touch that when it's, you know, killed so many of my favorite artists?
That's right. You look back at the history now and you see how many lives it's taken, and maybe
too many.
You rethink it. Yeah, way too many. Yeah.
What and that ties into nicely into another question I wanted to ask you, is what advice would you give someone who's really beginning a serious band?
Well, I would right away make sure your band is serious. Talk to everyone, you know? What's your 1-year goal, your 5-year goal? Like, are you doing this for the drugs and the booze and the partying? Are you doing this because you just want to jam with friends? Or, like, are you career-minded? I guess first ask yourself, like, you know, do I want to do this? Do I want to take this seriously? And if the answer is yes, then try your best to make sure that the people you're surrounding yourself with feel the same way as you. Because that's how the Boom Boom survive. We all we all wanted to do this and continue to love to do this, and it's for some people and not for others. And so when you're having those first few jams, you know, a casual question to your bandmates that's like, you know, do you want to do this? You know, are you going to take this seriously? So I would right away figure that out. And then, yeah, man, write the music that you hear inside. Try and figure that out, what you hear in your soul and in your mind. And I really think it's a lot about luck as to whether or not you're going to get played on the radio or whatever, because everyone needs to find their unique voice and then share it. And if that happens to be the trend at the time, then you're going to do really well, but you can't follow other trends. You can't, like right now on the radio in the R&B and pop world, there's a lot of reggaeton and soca and like Caribbean and Latin.
Like that Havana song.
Exactly. That's a case in point.
Uh-huh.
Tune.
I mean, quite literally, it's like, oh, yeah, in capital city of Cuba.
Yeah, it's all about Cuba.
A little on the nose.
The rhythm is very Latin and like sort of the melodic sentiments in the refrains. But if you were starting a band now and you're like, oh, let's try and write a bunch of Havanas, by the time you got them out into the world, the culture will have shifted.
Oh, yeah.
So you're best off to write your own original stuff, and you'll be the happiest playing that. People will receive that the best, and even if that isn't going to get you on national radio, and radio is so different than it used to be. It's not the be-all and end-all. Where it used to be like you needed to have a song on the radio to tour, but now you don't. You know, you need to have a strong social media campaign and the willingness to hit the streets and know your markets and know your brand, and it's another game now. So be true to yourself and don't try and emulate anyone, and surround yourself with people who want it as bad as you do, or at least close to as bad as you do.
Because really, it's kind of that positive feedback loop, being around the right people.
100%. Yeah.
That's great. All wonderful pearls of wisdom there.
Thanks.
Fortunately, we're running out of time, but I'd love to ask you what some of your favorite Vancouver bands are on. Yeah. Who some of your favorite Vancouver bands are, and who you would recommend that we bring onto the show.
Year of the Wolf.
We have them on our list.
Okay, good. Yeah, they're my favorite rock and roll band in Vancouver right now. Good gosh. El Wolf, to keep it in the Wolf theme. El Wolf is a wonderful singer-songwriter, and she's super active in lifting up local independent music in Vancouver. And
fantastic.
She started this Facebook group called the High Tides Community, and it's a big forum for indie acts and bands to get together and pool resources and, you know, fill slots here and help each other out with promo, and she writes great songs, so I would recommend her. ELLE Wolf, and Year of the Wolf, and it'd be really cool if you, there's a band called Kudapira, and they're a marimba group.
Ooh.
And I don't think you could fit many marimbas in this booth.
But probably one.
You could definitely maybe get one, and maybe they could figure something out. Yeah. They've been around for a long time, and Theo from the Boom Booms, he's one of their principal members, and they're an awesome band. They shut down Granville Street busking and every summer, and they bring, because you're not really allowed to have significant amplification downtown as per the busking laws, but they play, they're so loud without amps because they have these huge marimbas and a drum kit, and even if you don't have them on the show, check them out. They're great.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
So how can people follow what you're doing with Small Town Artillery and the Boom Booms?
Well, I'm a regular Instagrammer and Facebooker. Try to keep people updated on the social meds. Instagram.com/smalltownartillery, Facebook.com the same. And then Instagram.com/theboombooms, Facebook.com the same. And I run both of those pages, so it's me that'll be writing you for the most part if you say hello to us on there. And I would just recommend going and listening to A Million Miles, and going and listening to the Small Town Artillery album. I find a lot of people sort of find you on Facebook, but they haven't heard their music, you know, they just kind of seen the profile picture, and I find that a really weird disconnect. like you have all these likes on your page where they don't necessarily know what your band sounds like. So I don't know if that's the case for any of our fans, but yeah, come find us and say hello and have a listen to the music, because that's why the Facebook page exists and why the Instagram page exists.
Yeah, absolutely. I also want to mention both those records are available on Spotify for all you Spotify listeners out there.
Yeah.
It's right there. Just search it up.
Yeah.
Trust me, it's worth it. They're
Take
both fantastic albums. And thank you so much, Tom. To play you out, we're going to play one of your studio tracks. We are going to play...
Honestly?
Oh, we played that
we
already.
We played that already.
And I want to say something before we
disappear. Okay, great.
Disappear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big thank you to both of you. I think you're great interviewers and quite articulate and interested, and that doesn't always happen. So
thank
keep,
you, Tom.
Keep
really
it up.
I appreciate that.
And this coming Sunday, a week from today, I'm going to be on Ian Cromwell's awesome event, Locals Lounge, at the Belmont Bar, which starts around 6, 6.30 p.m. and goes till around 9.30, 10. He's going to be interviewing me. I'm going to play a bunch of brand new material, and it's going to be awesome. So come down and check that out. Yeah, I want to play for you.
Absolutely. And
oh,
we'll
and
be-
one more thing. March 9th at the Cobalt with Chase the Bear and Pretty Filthy and Small Town Artillery. It's going to be a crazy show. March 9th, Cobalt. Okay. That's it. That's all my plugs.
Thank you, Tom. And we'll be adding additional plugs on our social media over the next coming weeks.
Awesome.
Especially including that Locals Lounge show.
Wait.
So we are going to play Sorrow.
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
Yeah.
This is Sorrow.
Big tune.
This is Sorrow.
Peace out, y'all.
Oh, Baby, baby, can you riddle me this? Cause right now I feel like true love doesn't exist. In this moment of blue color weakness, I'm still dreaming of the release of your kiss. Baby, baby, can you find it inside? Forgive me on this long mountain climb. We both got naked, but I suddenly see that, baby, you got a lot more naked than me. Baby, baby, I was wrong to be blunt. I left you home and carried on with the hurt. And now you found a man who's time to love you. Well, I'm shooting for the stars and shine above you.
There we go. Now we can hear ourselves.
Mics are important.
Yes. Thank you, Travis. Thanks for listening. We're your hosts, James Olson and
Travis Noel.
And this has been our guest, Tom Van Derzen.
Yes. Hello.
Thank you so much for coming on, Tom. We really appreciate it. Pacific Sound Radio is produced by Jane Fraze. And how can people check us out and follow us, Travis?
Well, you can check us out on Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, Instagram, at Pacific Sound Radio, Twitter, Pacific S Radio, YouTube, Pacific Sound Media, our PacificSoundRadio.com. We had some people holding up a sign that said, "Freeze the crowd." That's probably important, too.
I suppose, yeah. I guess that is important.
Mm-hmm. You can join us next week, February 25th, from 4 to 6. Only on Save On Radio, and after that, you can go see a show at the Belmont.
Yes, where you can see this lovely man, Tom Van Derzen, perform for Locals Lounge. You can listen live at saveonradio.com every Sunday from 4 to 6, which is, I hope, what people have been doing right now and what you can do next week. Because we have a little bit more time, I'm going to ask Tom if he wants to perform one more acoustic song. We have about, I want to say a few minutes. Do you have something short?
Can't say no.
Why not?
Okay.
Yeah. I'll play a fast version of this song called Sun and Soil.
Excellent.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm actually going to play it literally fast and see how it sounds. Well, there is a type of crazy mushroom that runs underneath the earth for miles. Connected by a spider web of endless root systems, it's one of the largest living organisms in the world. Yeah, talk about mycelium, the fungal network through which trees communicate with plants and stuff. Yeah, it may hold the answer to my century. So dependent on oil, but we can break free. The sun and the soil, you know they're my energy. Yep, sun and the soil are my energy. Ooh! And the time is now, Vancouver, like it always has been. Don't you get your feet stuck in the mud, you got to keep on moving. Moving, yeah. I like it upbeat like this. I keep my feet upon the pedals of my life. It's a battle to be free, and it's a wonder how we wonder at all. Wonderment don't cease. I'm wondering just what will become of humanity, yeah.
is too many gadgets and not enough food, grown from the land and sown by hand. And I just got to love you from the bottom of my heart. Have I ever been there though? So long ago I started falling. And the time is now, like it always has been. Don't you get your feet stuck in the mud, you got to keep on moving, moving, yeah.
Thank you again, Tom. That was Tom Van Druzen, and this has been Pacific Sound Radio. Everyone, have yourselves a good night.
Yeah.